Ready?
Our evening began in Peter Seychelles' comfortable study in his New York townhouse.
No sleep till
Brooklyn! Yeah! Brooklyn, Bronx, Queens, it's that end. From the Battery to the top of Manhattan.
Yo, rope!
Hello there, everyone. My name is Jim Shear, and welcome to the Brouhaha, the unofficial, the unsanctioned Beastie Boys podcast. And the bomb dropped. We got some Beastie Boys news. Finally! Hot Sauce Committee Part 2 coming out in the spring of 2011. And here's how it went down in my world. I was doing an episode of the Brouhaha with Beastie Nut from BeastieMania.com. About an hour after we talked, I went to the Beastie Boys website. Let it be known, I am not obsessed, but every time I get on the internet, BeastieBoys.com, that's my landing page. The site wouldn't come up. And then in the morning, I got the email, and I'm sure all of you got the email, saying that Hot Sauce Committee Part 1 would be put on indefinite hold, but according to schedule, Hot Sauce Committee Part 2 would come out in the spring of 2011. Hip hip hooray. And here's my take on the whole matter. Last year, we were supposed to get Hot Sauce Committee Part 1. And we didn't, for obvious reasons. But because the Beastie Boys named the album Hot Sauce Committee Part 1, and because we were not satisfied with what we get now, but we're always curious about what the Beastie Boys have in store for us in the future, everyone speculated about, you know, would there be a Hot Sauce Committee Part 2? Some said that it would be an all-digital release. I didn't buy that. Because, let's face it, the Beastie Boys, you know, they're very ambiguous. They're mysterious. They plan big, and they don't always come through on those big plans. And I'm not hating them for it. I'm just saying, you know, they're busy. They're married. They have kids. You know, they can't cater to our needs 24/7. You know, for example, the mix-up. It was supposed to have a part two with vocals on it. That never happened. During the pageant tour in Chicago, fans were given cameras. A film was never made, from that pageant tour stop. I don't know if the film will ever come out. So when the Beastie Boys named their brand new album Hot Sauce Committee Part 1, I wasn't holding my breath. I knew in my heart, and I still think this, you know, maybe they'll prove me wrong, but I knew that there wasn't going to be a Hot Sauce Committee Part 2. And my point was proven when the Beastie Boys announced that Hot Sauce Committee Part 2 would come out in the spring of 2011, and the track listing of Hot Sauce Committee Part 2 is identical to the track listing on Hot Sauce Committee Part 1. But, you know, I love the album title. I love that there's a Part 1 and Part 2. It lets the Beastie Boys riff on their fabulous humor, because, as you know, the Beastie Boys are funnier than most comedians out there today. So, first of all, by calling the album Hot Sauce Committee, you gotta figure that that's a Beastie Boys inside joke of some sort. You know, maybe they were hanging out at the oscilloscope, they got takeout lunch, there were some bottles of hot sauce on top of the refrigerator, Ad Rock was like, I like this hot sauce better, MCF, I think this hot sauce, you know, we're having a Hot Sauce Committee, right? Hot Sauce Committee! That would be a great album title! So I love the fact that I think the album title is an inside joke, and then the joke even becomes funnier because there's a part one and part two, and it's basically the same thing. And I'm just happy that we have not a release date, but a release season, the spring of 2011. And with that, the Brouhaha is underway. I think we've got a pretty quality episode today. I should just cut out the pretty. We have a quality episode today. We will chat with Justin Prager, a music professional, I worked with him at MTV. He was in charge of programming music videos. He interned at Capitol Records in the early 90s when, you know, a spectacular album came out, had a black and white album cover, Glennie Friedman picture. He interned at the first ever hip-hop station, K-Day, out on the West Coast. Did some time with The Box and currently works for Music Choice. Also, a couple days ago, I got to hang out with Kid Rock. Yes, the Kid Rock. And he was kind enough to give us a few minutes to chat on the Brouhaha. And you will hear that in a little bit. And then later on, John, he will play 20 Questions. So you've got Jim, Justin, and John. Those are the three Skinny J's. We've got Kid Rock, and you can hear his interview right after this.
They grew up in New York City, where they soon became bored with high school, and they dropped out to pursue the hardcore punk rock scene. Following their flirtation with punk, they became involved with the emerging rap scene, and their debut album, License to Ill, has been certified as the fastest-selling debut in the history of their label. Now, are these rappers Run-DMC, the Beastie Boys, or the Fat Boys? We'll find out when we come back for more Golden Grace.
We have returned on the Brouhaha, now hanging out with Kid Rock. Question, have you ever met or hung out with the Beastie Boys?
Yes, I have. Mike D happens to be a neighbor of mine out in Malibu, so a mutual friend of ours, Ian Rogers, who's a great friend of both of us, years ago introduced us, and now we have dinner a few times a year, and, you know, see him on the beach all the time. I guess you'd say we've become friends, and what a cool guy.
Do you play volleyball together?
We have not played volleyball together.
All right, or bocce on the sand.
No, but I have been at my house one night in Malibu, and Rev Run was there with his wife Jess and Mike and his wife, and they were just going back. They hadn't seen each other in years, and they were going back and forth about all the old school stories from back in the day. And, you know, as a fan of both those guys, of the Beasties and Run DMC, it was, you know, what a treat to sit in on that, you know, just kind of be a fly on the wall.
Any cool stories that you heard?
Yeah, but I don't feel right, you know, repeating stories.
All right.
You know, when I'm third party to them.
I gotcha. But you and Rev Run talking about doing an album together.
Yeah, we've been talking about it for years, and he's really fired up over the last few months. He's been emailing me like, Rock, I want to go in the studio and make a Grammy Award-winning record. And I'm like, take it easy, Rev. It's not about winning Grammys, man. I'm trying to really motivate him to write really cool, classic, you know, hip-hop tunes. And
Would it be you two just going back and forth?
Well, I think I'd be more on the production,
okay,
helping him with that. I'm sure that we'd end up doing a couple things together because, you know, him being on tour with me and me getting to play DMC every night was, you know, again, just, you know, still got to, you know, pinch myself every once in a while and realize that still happened. You know, we really got a rhythm together, you know, when we're rhyming and just on stage. And so it'd be fun to get in the studio with just a pair of turntables, maybe a couple good guitars, and
because you've got all the old drum machines still.
Yeah, I collect all that stuff. So you know, to pull out the old DMXs and 808s and stuff, and just get in there and kind of make a raw record. I think we'll do it and see what happens. And if we got something great and raw, I'd like to make, like, you know, like the old blues cats do. You know, when you see John Lee Hooker, the Healer. You know, I'd take like Rev Run and, don't worry about what's going on right now, Rev, and the world of popular music. Let's just do what you do best and try to capture that essence.
And you brought up Ian Rogers' name.
Yeah.
He wrote the article about you.
Grand Royal. Grant,
you are a cover boy of Grand Royal magazine on the pinball issue.
Yeah, which is funny. And talking to him and Mike about it, it's like, you know, he got the okay from Mike to do the story. And they didn't know if they were just going to come rag me, you know, tease me or whatever. You know, this white kid in Detroit. I was making pretty racy, wild music back then, hip-hop stuff. And thank God when he interviewed me, they liked me and you know, could feel my vibe and put me on the cover and wrote a really good article. And that was really one of the first articles that kind of sent me into national spotlight and got record companies kind of interested in what I was doing.
And many years later, you're about to release your brand new album, yeah. Born Free.
Yes.
Rick Rubin produced this.
Yeah.
As we all know, Rick Rubin produced License to Ill.
Yeah.
Any good stories about Rick Rubin in the studio? Did he talk about the old days at all? Him and Russell hanging out?
Oh, yeah. Well, Russell's a good friend of mine. I always you know, me and my son will go out and stay with Russell in the Hamptons for a weekend here and there. Russell's great, man. We just fuck with each other nonstop. Talk about just, you know, a cap war. Me and Russell can go for hours. He's funny. I love him to death. But, you know, it was funny. One time we were sitting in the studio, me and Rick, and I was working on some songs, and I'm working the computers and everything and programming stuff and doing this, that, and the other. And Rick goes, man, that's incredible. And I was like, oh, you like where I put the chorus on that song, how I flew it in there? He goes, no, just that you can work all that stuff. I'm like, what, man?
But I'm sure you've heard stories about Rick Rubin back in the day.
Yeah, him like programming the beat on "I Need a Beat" and like spending, you know, hours on like
with tape loops across the room.
Yeah, just like you know, the hi hat, you know, just messing with the hi hat and like, yeah, a cool "I Need a Beat" for hours on end, stuff like that. Yeah.
But coming from the old school of hip hop, because you've been doing it for a while, I think since you were a teenager.
Yeah, I got my first record was, you know, facilitated by Boogie Down Productions. So I go back a little ways.
You? Yeah. So hearing stories about Rick Rubin from back in the day, and then Rick Rubin now.
Yeah.
I mean, is he the Zen master? Is there no wildness left in that man?
I don't know that he's ever been wild. I mean, I can't speak on him back then because I didn't know him. I was just a fan back then. But, you know, he's never had a drink, never had a drug, you know, never put anything foreign in his body. You know, he's real.
Forever or just recently?
Oh, forever.
Oh, forever?
All yeah, right. He's all always right. Been able to surprise me. So I guess I've been doing it for both of us all these years.
And what is your Beastie album of choice?
Oh, man.
Now, did you like Paul's Boutique the first time you heard it?
I loved... I was a little thrown off by it, like everybody else.
Okay.
I mean, I loved, you know, when "Shake Your Rump" hit, I was like, wow, this record's going to be insane. Great. And then, I'm a record collector, and I knew a lot of the classic samples they were using on there. So I was into that. It just took me a little bit to kind of get into it, I guess, like everybody else. But I would dare say that it's probably, you know, "License to Ill" to me is still just, you know, I love it. You know, I can't get enough of it. It just screams, let's have a good time. You know, it's nostalgia, too, of my teenage years and getting wild, just pounding beers and you know, putting that record on. So I guess I'd still have to stick with "License to Ill," but as a musician and a songwriter, that's as a fan, as a musician and a songwriter, yeah, Paul's Boutique.
And then have you been following the Beasties, their new stuff?
Yeah.
I mean, have you followed them throughout the years, Hella Nasty, To the Five Boroughs, The Mix-Up?
Mm-hmm.
You know about Hot Sauce Committee Part 2?
No.
No? Mike never talks about it on the beach?
No, we don't really, you know, talk too much about, you know, we'll talk a little bit about music maybe and jams and listening, you know, just odd stuff.
But he never invites you over and say, oh, listen, I got this new song right here. You got to listen to it.
No, not really. And Ian was trying to get me to play my new record one night. I was like, no, Ian, no. I feel really weird, you know. As much as I'd love to play him the record, I'd rather him just, you know, if he listened to the record, that'd mean the world to me, which I hope he will. I think he will. But I didn't. It's just something weird about that, you know, with somebody you look up to that much, you know.
And you've seen the Beastie Boys live, because I remember reading the old Grand Royal article. You said you saw them at Cabo.
No, I saw them at Cobo.
Cobo. I said it wrong. Yeah, C-O-B-O.
Yeah, legendary Cobo Hall in Detroit. Yeah, and I was in complete shock. I was very young, and I used to go to all the hip-hop concerts, and when I went to that show, I was like, who are these white kids rapping? I was like, I was sure I was the only white kid that could rap in the world. At that time, I didn't think any other, you know, white kids even knew what this stuff was. So it was quite a shock to see them on stage. But, you know, this was before the internet and all that stuff.
Yeah.
So, you know, you didn't really know. Even when you got records, you didn't know what people looked like. It was before, you know, where I grew up, we didn't have MTV.
And final question, because you're a busy man promoting the new album. I think you're going to Germany in a couple days.
Yes, sir.
If you could only listen to one more Beastie Boys song for the rest of your life, what song would that be?
Oh, man.
Mine would be... Just to get your brain working. Yeah. So what you want?
Well, that'd be a good one.
How about that, huh?
Ooh.
Eh?
Gosh. That's tough. I think it'd probably be "Shake Your Rump."
"Shake Your Rump." All right, Kid Rock. Thank you for hanging out on the Brouhaha.
You're welcome, man.
Kid Rock, on the Brouhaha. There you go. And I love the fact that when you're in high school, hanging out at your locker, you can ask your buddy what his favorite Beastie Boys song is, and he will give you a serious answer. And then fast forward to 2010, you can ask that same exact question to a multi-platinum recording artist. They will think about the question seriously, and they too will give you a sincere answer. A simple question that never gets old. Behold the power of music. So once again, thank you to Kid Rock for appearing on the Brouhaha. You know, maybe you're not down with Kid Rock. Maybe you didn't like the whole rap rock thing he was doing in the late 90s, early 2000s. Maybe you're not down with his country music. Remember, though, Mike D, he also put out a country album. Say what you will, Kid Rock, down to earth, cool dude. And I know the Beastie Boys would never align themselves with Kid Rock musically because the whole American Badass thing, strippers, beer, saying what he says in some of his songs, it doesn't fit with the Beastie Boys' mission statement. But when you think about it, you know, the Beastie Boys have some stuff in common with Kid Rock. Both work their butts off to get respect in the hip-hop game. Both toured with Run DMC. Just looking at their names, Kid Rock, take out the K and the I, add an A, and presto, you've got Ad-Rock. Kid Rock has a Hall of Fame vote. He got that vote because he has inducted three people into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And I think once you induct one person, you get a vote. And he said that he will be voting for the Beastie Boys to get into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. So once again, thank you, Kid Rock, for appearing on the unofficial, unsanctioned Beastie Boys podcast, The Brouhaha. When we come back, we will be hanging out with Justin Prager, a music professional. And if you don't know who he is, and if you don't know what he does, we will explain all of that when we come back. What's my name? Come on, come on. I said, what's my name?
You're listening to the Brouhaha.
We have returned on the Brouhaha, now joined by Justin Prager. Welcome, Justin.
AKA Justin Time.
AKA, that's your DJ name.
That is my DJ name. A lot of people out there might know me as Justin Time, so, you know, I want to just make sure that people know it's that, you know, a lot of people might not know me as Prager, so just kind of clarifying that yes, this is Justin Time as well.
And before we start, because you haven't listened to this podcast yet.
I have not.
Do you know who you are following?
Who am I following?
Kid Rock.
What?
We had Kid Rock on.
Oh, shit.
Kid Rock.
Really? Wow.
Superstar episode.
This little back-to-back, yeah.
Bam, bam.
Just, you know, at least people know one of them. But, wow, Kid Rock, very impressive.
A lot of people don't know that his hip-hop career started when he was a teenager.
And oh, I know.
He was touring with Ice Cube.
Let me tell you. You want me to tell you his history?
Tell me.
He came out with an album in 89 on Jive Records, and actually Too Short put him on.
Mm-hmm.
Am I correct?
I believe so.
Okay. Well, I used to play Yodeling Through the Valley on my hip-hop show way back in the day. And, yeah, it was like this white dude, and we weren't even sure who he was. And all of a sudden, he's associated with Too Short, so obviously that gave him some cred. And one thing led to another, and boom. You know, he's on Jive Records. I mean, the album didn't do anything, but still. Anyway, I'm just trying to flex my knowledge right now because I know you're going to kill me with the Beastie knowledge. So.
No, that's good, though. And do you know that Kid Rock sort of worked his way up the ranks? I think he toured with Ice Cube.
Yep.
Was associated with BDP for a second. And
for a second. I think that was because of the Jive Records connection.
Right. Yeah. Dave Skilkin, I think, did one of his album covers.
Oh, wow.
Because he rolled with Dave Skilkin when he came to the East Coast.
Really?
But then around the early 90s, Vanilla Ice took off,
yeah.
Ruined credibility for white rappers, and then no one wanted to touch Kid Rock.
No one wanted to touch him. But then, at least, you know, Kid, I guess. I don't know, should I call him Kid or Rock?
or Bob. Yeah.
Or Bob. Richie. Yeah, then he signed to Continuum Records, because I remember a buddy of mine from college actually started to work for Continuum.
Yeah.
Back in the early 90s, and came out with a couple of decent albums. Stone Cold Pimpin', right?
I think it was like early morning stone
early morning
pimp.
Stoner, right? Yeah.
And the Polyfuse Method, which is dripping with License to Ill influence.
You are absolutely correct.
With the big rock guitars and then the rhymes over them.
Yep, So he kind of blazed the trail, but unfortunately a lot of people didn't hear that material because it was on the small label and just really didn't, you know, kind of take off.
And now he's a country singer.
And now look at him, yeah?
Yeah.
Country singer. Got the new song, Born Free, I believe it's called.
Now, the reason you know so much is because all of your professional career has been in the music industry.
It has. I've been a very lucky guy in that sense.
So if we can just go through your resume right now, because people might be like, why is Justin on the brouhaha?
Yeah, like,
and then when you hear, then when you hear your resume, people are like, oh, okay.
Yeah. Well, you know, still people would be like, who gives a crap? But anyway, you know, really started out in college. I went to University of Hartford. But meanwhile, while I was at Hartford, I was interning. My family actually lived out in L.A., so I was actually interning at K-Day, K-D-A-Y, 1580 AM.
Which was?
The first all-hip-hop formatted radio station.
You've got clout right now.
Yeah.
So what did you do at K-Day?
Basically filed records and things like that, and actually came up on a lot of great vinyl there, including a few Beastie promos, because they sure as hell weren't going to play them. it was a pretty interesting time because it was right around the time, obviously, gangster rap was really at its full force. I mean, we're talking like 89, 90. So everything from N.W.A. was dominating. You know, obviously the Eazy-E solo stuff, and then Cube came out with his solo stuff.
Yeah, you couldn't sneak looking down the barrel of a gun on there.
That was tough. That would have been a tough one. They really weren't touching the Beastie-esque hip-hop back then.
All
right.
It was
really dominated by everything, you know, Ruthless Records and everything else. Also, I entered the Capitol Records.
There we go. Around
LA.
91-92.
91-92, when, of course, Check Your Head came out. So,
Can I stop you right there?
You can stop me right there.
Can you take me through that time?
I'll take you through that time. Now, just keep in mind, I was still going to school, so I was there only during the summer.
How many days a week were you there?
I was there pretty much every day for the summer.
That's awesome.
It was great.
Don't play that down. That's awesome.
I'm proud of it.
Okay.
I'm trying to remember the exact date, which, hey, let me throw that on you. What was the exact date Check Your Head came out?
Oh, boy. See, now I wouldn't win the Beastie round. It was... I thought it was early 92, right?
Was it? Yeah, you might be right. Yeah, you might be right, because I remember I got some swag from California while I was at school, and obviously that would have been early 92. But I do remember when I was there, because, you know, usually it was like between June and August, there was some type of rooftop party. I believe it was for maybe either the gold or the platinum certification for Check Your Head. So that, I believe, was the first time I met the guys. And I remember Adam not being in a great mood.
Which Adam?
I mean, I'm sorry, Adam, of course, Horowitz.
Okay.
Ad-Rock. Yelk was cool, and Mike was doing his own thing. But, it was pretty cool. It was like a rooftop, like a little rooftop celebration for the guys.
And how did you introduce yourself to the Beastie Boys?
I said, I interned for Capitol Records, and they were like, all right, can you go grab me a pig in a blanket or something? So, they were cool, though. They were cool. I mean, it was kind of brief. I mean, we went up there. We were just kind of hanging for a minute. I actually think I talked to Ad-Rock a little about, you know, just as far as the history with those guys and things like that. And I told him, you know, just kind of like, you know, where I came from and the hip-hop shows and stuff like that. And, that was it. I mean, I vaguely remember it, but I remember being on the rooftop with the guys, and it was pretty cool.
Well, you know, I mean, you know what happened during the first rooftop party.
Yes, for Paul's Boutique.
Paul's Boutique, and then a whole bunch of people got fired, and people thought the Beastie Boys were idiots. So maybe there was still some hard feelings.
There could have been. You're absolutely right. Although that, you know, Check Your Head was a success and everything, I think, you know, the powers that be there were warming up to him at the time. And if you do recall, in 89, they actually changed Capitol Records to Beastie Boy Records for a second.
For a day.
And for a day. And they wove the flag high on the roof. They put up a Beastie Boys Records flag, I believe.
Yeah, to make it look like the Capitol Records logo.
Exactly. It was the same thing. So, and the Capitol Records building, for those who are wondering what the hell I'm talking about, is that circular building that looks like it was actually modeled after a stack of records.
Yeah, and it's...
You know that, Jim?
I did not know that, but I know that it's tiny. Because the first time I saw it, I thought, I imagine it being bigger.
What, the Capitol Records building?
Yeah.
Yeah, did you ever go inside?
No, because I could, it didn't look big from the outside, and I thought, if it doesn't look big from the outside, it's probably so cramped on the inside.
Yeah, you kind of got dizzy anytime you had to walk to somebody else's desk, because you have to basically go around in circles to do it.
How many?
But it was a cool building, though.
Oh, it looks cool, and yeah. It makes for a great logo, but how many offices were on one floor?
There were a bunch. I mean, it was actually, it might be bigger than you think.
Okay.
Yeah, it was a decent-sized office. It was just because I think it was round instead of square. It probably looked a little smaller, but no, definitely a decent-sized office. It wasn't that cramped, but it was weird because you, like I said, you had to kind of just walk around in circles to get to everywhere.
Now, for your internship, did you get to deal with any Beastie Boys goodies?
I came across some decent stuff.
You gave me that ninja thing. That, like, I think you'd use at record stores to separate the CDs.
Yeah, I gave you that.
I got that.
There was also a bunch of demos lying around, cassettes, which I believe I still have, from the Check Your Head sessions. You know, I know, like, Gratitude, like, an early version of Gratitude was on there. There was a few other things that were on there. That's something, though, I figured I would have dubbed for you. I didn't give you those?
You know what? I might have the cassette, but my cassettes are in a box somewhere.
Yeah, I'm actually in my basement, so, you know, like, basically, I'm in the archives of the
scene.
Archives right now. I'm looking at cassettes right now, so I'm sure they're in there somewhere. If I do come across them, though, I will make sure you get a copy.
Yeah, you let us know. So, and what kind of stuff were you doing at Capitol at the time?
I was just interning in the A&R department. You know, Check Your Head was already out and running, so it wasn't like I'm not going to claim that I worked on the album or anything like that. You know, so I was just basically, I was an intern. So, you know, anything from listening to demos to, you know, filling up somebody's coffee mug.
But did you sense an excitement around the office? Because that album basically put them back on the map.
Yeah, no. They were definitely held in high regards, you know, when I was there. In 91, obviously, they were still working on the album, and they were coming off of Pulse with Peak, which obviously was, you know, a critic's darling, but, you know, it wasn't like the mega thing that they thought, you know, like License to Ill was. But, like 91, like no one was really talking about Beasties. And then obviously, and they hate to be called the Beasties, don't they? That's what I heard one time.
I don't know. I've never heard that.
Way back in the day, they were like, don't call us the Beasties. We like to be called the Beastie Boys. I mean, that's just a little thing that I'm just throwing out there in case you talk to one of them ever.
I have talked to them, and I think I've referred to them as the Beasties.
They might not have liked that.
Maybe that's why I'm not in their inner circle yet.
That might be why. Because I don't know. I just remember a story a while ago. They didn't like being called the Beasties. But we can still call them the Beasties anyway. Easier to say that than Beastie Boys all the time.
Now, did they ever come through the offices besides the rooftop party?
That was really the only time, when they did the party. Because they were on tour as well. So they actually were doing the Palladium, I believe, that night. And I checked them out. No pun intended.
Oh, man. See, I didn't get to go to that show.
I was at that show.
Was it good?
Oh, what, are you talking about just in general, the Check Your Head tour?
The Check Your Head tour. They never came to Pittsburgh.
Ah, never did.
No.
That might have been, that was probably the first time I saw them, was in 92 for Check Your Head.
Was it good? Huh?
It was great.
Oh.
It was cool because, you know, I got really heavily into hip-hop in the late 80s, and, you know, when they... Should I go back a little with the Beasties history with Justin Time?
Let's take a break.
Right. I don't want to get ahead of myself.
Yeah, let's take a break. We're going to go back to where you became a Beastie fan, and then we will talk about you programming Beastie Boys videos for MTV. And because are you an executive now in the music industry? Could we call you that?
I don't want to call myself an executive because then it sounds like I'm a suit and then everybody will hate me and turn off this podcast. So I'm not an executive.
He's not an executive.
I'm probably the farthest thing from an executive.
But you...
I have executive tendencies maybe once in a while.
But you're a music professional.
You can call me a music professional.
So I want to pick your brain.
I'm a music fan.
Okay, but I want to pick your brain on the Beastie's new album.
Okay.
So we will do all of this when we come back on the Brew, haha.
Welcome back to Oscilloscope Sports Team Barbecue Talk. I am Dan Harper, and to my left is
Hank Kingsley,
none other than, yes.
Yo, you know who I'm living with right about here, right? Beastie Boys. Yep. In full effect right about now. I got my Mella over here, Mike D, Cool Ad Rock, MCA, Hurricane got clouds. knocking suckers' heads out. What's up, y'all? How y'all doing?
All right.
Pretty good.
Man, all right.
Everything's back in dosage.
Back on the brouhaha with Justin Prager, a.k.a. Justin Time.
Yeah.
And now let's go back to the start of your Beastie fandom. What year? What album?
Okay.
I know you got to remember. And the reason you're on the brouhaha is because when we worked together at MTV, we clicked immediately because we were both Beastie Boys fans.
Yeah.
And to me, it always seemed that you were a fan, like, back in the day, even before License Deal. It seems to me that you were, like, a She's On It guy.
I was a like, let's put it this way. I knew of the Beastie Boys back on in the She's On It era. I'm definitely not going to say Pollywog Sue or anything like that. Definitely, I caught wind of the Beasties first, actually, when they opened up for Madonna.
Whoa.
I didn't see that show, but that's when I first caught wind of them, because actually MTV did a little piece on that. On them really quickly. I think they compared it to like when Hendrix opened up for when Hendrix opened up for the Monkees. I don't know if you ever knew that little tidbit, but I remember them comparing it to that, which basically it was. Now, when it came time for License to Ill, I was a real like heavy into like the classic rock stuff as well as like, you know, the metal stuff, hair metal stuff and all that. I mean, as you know, Jim, I'm a very big Van Halen fan.
Well, we should also point out that when years ago, when David Lee Roth and Sammy Hagar were touring together,
yes.
I don't know how you rationalized it to the higher ups, but one day on MTV2, we had both of them come in.
We did separately.
Totally didn't fit our demographic, but you worked it somehow where they both came in.
I don't know how I pulled that off, but how was it? It was a fun interview, wasn't it?
It was maybe one of my most memorable interviews ever, because I didn't understand a word David Lee Roth said, but when I watched it back on tape, it all made sense.
Right. But what was the quote? Didn't he have like a quote that you always used for a little while?
You know what? After that interview,
Ariel's or something. I'm trying to think what it was.
I forget, but after that interview, we quoted him for like a year nonstop.
Oh, yeah.
But you being a big metal fan, it seems like License to Ill should have been right down your alley, because that had some big rock on it.
You know what? The whole thing is, you know, I was, you know, as I am now still, I mean, I love rock and everything. But back then, you know, I was really into the rock stuff, and I was a little offended, actually, by the Beastie Boys. You know, sampling Zeppelin, like When the Levee Breaks. I was actually, I saw them as a huge novelty, I'm going to be honest, because a lot of friends of mine were really into them. They went to go see them at the Worcester Centrum and, you know, outside of Boston. And, you know, they were, you know, they loved them and all this stuff. And I listened to it, and I was just like, I mean, I got it, but I wasn't like, wow. You know, fast forward a little, I really started getting into hip hop when it came time to the Rakims, to the BDPs, to Public Enemy, and I really started taking an appreciation for hip hop. And once that happened, I definitely opened up a little more. I didn't like, you know, start loving License to Ill, but when Paul's Boutique came out, that's when I really started to love the beat.
Wow.
Because I appreciated the sampling and everything that they were doing creatively with it. You know, sampling a drum loop from Zeppelin, you know, isn't really too creative to me. But when they started sampling all this stuff for Paul's, that's when really, like, I started to get into them. And I actually bought the cassette the day it came out. I remember, I believe it was at Warehouse Records in L.A.
No, wait, why did you buy it the day it came out?
Because I was really, like, curious to hear, you know, what they were doing. Because I heard Hey Ladies already, because I was the first single. And I bought the cassette, which was a black cassette.
You got a black cassette.
A what?
Black.
It was a black cassette. I still have it. They tried to make it look like an old school Capitol Records cassette, like from back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
So I remember it was a black cassette. And at the time, the clear cassettes were actually really popular, so they really wanted to flip it. Well, back then, the PCs really wanted to go 70s retro anyway.
Yep.
So, and they were really into their L.A. scene and everything. It was actually a cool time to be in L.A. as a PC fan, because they really kind of migrated out to L.A. and became these L.A. dudes. And, that's when I really got into them. And then I really started to appreciate them.
But then did you later appreciate the stuff they did on License to Ill?
I actually did, because I really like what they were doing with, like, the drum machines. Obviously, you know, Rick Rubin, you know, being obviously the big part of that.
Yeah,
I really started to appreciate it when I went back to it.
So then you became a fan and you never looked back, correct?
Correct.
All right. So let's fast forward to your MTV years.
Yes.
Was it tough programming Beastie Boys videos? Was there ever anyone in the department saying, like, no, we're over the Beasties?
Well, the thing is, the cool thing is, on MTV2, I was programming a retro block.
Mm-hmm.
So I would actually get to kind of sneak in videos, you know, Beastie videos then. And don't forget, I was at MTV from 2001 to 2004. And obviously, to the $5 didn't come out until 2004. And that was actually on the tail end of when I was at MTV.
And that was, so you worked at MTV during the hiatus.
The hiatus, correct. So the newest videos I had were basically from Hello Nasty. So those were really the only time I could really kind of throw those in, was really during like the late night retro blocks on MTV2, because they didn't have anything new. You know, we had some hip-hop shows on, but by that time, Crunk and all that other stuff, you know, the Southern stuff was in, so it just really didn't fit.
Because I remember when the Beastie Boys released To the Five Boroughs, and at this time you might have left MTV, because that was 2004.
Well, remember we went to the listening session together.
Yeah.
We saw each other at the listening session.
At the oscilloscope.
Yeah, exactly.
But when Well, that was 2004, but I was going to say, when they released that album,
yeah,
they really tried to hit the hip-hop market, because MTV was having Hip-Hop Week, and the Beastie Boys were a guest. Yeah, and they were sending out the single to hip-hop radio. And then a few weeks passed, and no one played it, and then rock radio, and then you know, all the rock videos.
Yeah, well, that's the whole thing with the Beasties anyway. They're never going to be on hip-hop radio, you know what I mean? Unfortunately, I mean, even if they do, you know, like Too Many Rappers or whatever, I mean, you didn't really hear Hot 97 bumping that. They're always going to be, now they're always going to be an alternative act, you know what I mean?
I know. Now, why is that?
Still consider hip-hop, there's no question that they are hip-hop, but they're just that different genre of hip-hop that will probably, unfortunately, never be embraced by, you know, by urban radio. Let's face it.
Man!
I'm sorry, Jim.
But you know what? Even if, like, Run DMC, if, you know, if DMC and DJ Run put out a song, I don't know if that would be embraced.
It probably would
by hip-hop radio. You know, it'd probably be embraced more by rock radio.
Oh, definitely. Rock radio would definitely play it. Yeah, there's no question about it. Yeah, it's just, unfortunately, it's kind of the sign of the times, you know? I mean, alternative radio is definitely a lot more acceptable to a lot of different, you know, sounds and types of music, where, you know, urban radio really just the core is now, you know, that hip-hop, you know, the hip-hop stuff really, you know, still the Southern stuff dominates, obviously, so Jay-Z, and,
Lil
you know,
Wayne.
Artists like him.
Yeah.
But that with
Lil Wayne.
Lil Wayne, yeah, of course, Lil Wayne.
Everything with a vocoder on it in auto-tune.
A lot of vocoder. I'm curious to see if the Beasties are going to do anything with vocoder on this album. That'd be interesting.
I would think not.
Although I think they have in the past.
See, you're a classic rock guy. What's that plastic tube that goes that Frampton...
Oh, the tube is like Peter Frampton used.
Yeah, Frampton used it, and Frampton Richie Sambora uses on Living on a Prayer.
It's just called not a vocoder. Actually, back in the day, I think it was called a vocoder. But it's really just called, like, the tube, I think. I'm trying to remember what that was called. Like, Joe Perry uses it on Sweet Emotion.
Because Ad-Rock has used that live.
Yeah. So that's kind of a variation of it, but not really, because the thing is, it's not auto-tuning your voice. It's just giving, like, a different effect to it.
Okay.
So it's more of an effect than it is. I mean, auto-tune is kind of what it says. It's trying to auto-tune your voice to actually be on pitch.
And I want to thank you before I forget, because when you remember, there was a show on MTV2 called Riffs and Rhymes.
Yes.
And it was,
oh my god, yeah.
Which you programmed. For some reason in my collection at the time, I didn't have the Beastie Boys performing So What You Want on Hanging with MTV.
You didn't.
So we would come up with a schedule. I'm like, all right, Justin, I'm like, I'm gonna be in my office Wednesday afternoon. I need you to schedule that video, and I'm going to have the VCR ready to go, and I'm going to tape it because I don't have it.
I did that a lot, actually, because the thing is, on a lot of shows, because I also programmed Headbangers Ball, you know, back then.
Yeah.
So a lot of the times when I just wanted to see something that I haven't seen in a while, I would program it. But the thing is, a lot of people appreciated that because, I mean, how many times, you know, have you seen the So Want You Want regular video?
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I wanted to kind of mix it up. I remember I think I played on Headbangers, I think I played a Mr. Brownstone video, like live from Argentina, that nobody had the rights to. and I still play. So it's like stuff like that. That it kind of just made it interesting because you know, now you can just go to YouTube and see whatever
right.
you want. Back then, you really couldn't find this stuff. And I remember, you know, a lot of people telling me, like, hey, thanks for playing that other version of, you know, so-and-so, because, you know, we're sick of watching the same old video all the time. So, you know, that was a perfect example of hanging with MTV with the Beasties.
Yeah, and back in the day, you didn't see Gratitude a lot either. So I got excited when Gratitude popped up on Riffs and Rhymes.
For you, Jim.
And speaking of VHS tapes, in my possession, I have a VHS interview of the Beastie Boys on a rooftop in New York City doing an interview for The Box.
The Box, yes.
And you worked for The Box for a little bit. Well, I should say, right? 7 years?
I was there for about 7 years, yeah. And if those of you, those youngsters out there who don't know what The Box is, or just those who forgot about it or never had it, It was kind of the predecessor to video on demand in a sense, because you would call up a 900 number and have to wait about 5 hours, you know, to get through all the Two Live Crew videos to see your video. You know, The Box was the first interactive video channel, I guess you could say.
And then the Beastie Boys came in just to do an interview during the Ill Communication era?
Yeah. They were in New York. Well, actually, we had to fly up to New York because we were based in South Beach in Miami.
Oh.
So, yeah, it was a very frigid night. We went up there.
So you were on that shoot?
I was on that shoot. I didn't do the shoot, but I was on that shoot.
And did you say to the Beasties, hey, I was that intern that met you on the rooftop?
I was an intern. They're like, oh, yeah, all right, kid.
But did you talk to them? Did you interact with the Beasties?
Yeah, no, I talked to them for a brief moment. Yeah, I also didn't want to be that guy like, hey, guys, go to the So I try to, you know, curb my enthusiasm.
Right.
But I talked to him for like a little bit, you know, just talking about the new album and saying, you know, and actually I was kind of honest with him. I'm like, you know, I love the direction you guys are going in because, to be honest with you, I wasn't like a big fan of, you know, License and everything. And I think they appreciated that. But, they were cool. And, you know, we were just basically talking about, you know, I play drums too. So, you know, I was talking to, you know, Mike D for a minute about that. And, they're genuine guys.
I'm going to ask you, I was going to say, if I had to ask you, but I will ask you because you're here, who do you think the most personable Beastie Boy is?
You know, like I said, I've met Ad Rock in a good mood and a bad mood, so in a good mood, he's probably the most personable.
Ad Rock?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
I always say MCA.
MCA is the most down to earth.
Oh, okay.
I think. I mean, this is just my few experiences.
Right.
I don't know that. I'm not claiming to know the guys at all or anything like that.
I'm not. You know, that's what I say too.
Yeah.
I've met him a handful of times, but you know, we've never had Tammy D cooking together.
Exactly. So Mike and Mike's a cool guy too. They're all cool guys. But I mean, just Ad Rock. You know, he's kind of the goofy guy and the whole thing. So, you know, that would maybe come off as a little more like, you know, if you want to call it friendly or whatever.
Does anyone else own that Box cassette, or am I the only person on the planet with it right now?
I think you may be the only person in possession of that Box cassette. Because what happened was, I'll give you a little history on what happened with the Box. The Box went off the air basically because Viacom, the behemoth that we used to both work for, bought the Box. So they basically converted all the boxes into MTV2. So by buying the Box, they accumulated all the archives and everything. Now they own all the rights to the Box footage.
And speaking of Viacom owning footage, a lot of people don't know, because when I was at MTV, throughout the work week, I would try to find raw Beastie interviews. Like I have, it was the Tibetan Freedom, I think it was the first Tibetan Freedom concert where Mike D's hanging out backstage with Serena Alchul. I have all of that backstage footage.
Very cool.
But
did you go to the archive? There's an archive that you can go to look up all that stuff.
Yeah, and some of it is tough because the people who entered the information, it wasn't entered correctly. So it's, I mean, you really got to do your research. But what I found out when trying to find all of these rare Beastie interviews is that there was a flood and a lot of classic MTV material was just ruined. And it no longer exists. So there's a lot of old 120 minutes episodes, and they're gone forever.
Yep. Well, they're gone physically, but I'm sure a lot of them you can find out, you know, when you go back to YouTube, you can probably find a lot of them on that. But
right, I mean, unless someone taped them on their VHS, we don't have a master copy anymore.
Exactly. So that's kind of the case, and this all kind of stems back to what we were talking about with the footage that you have of the, you know, the VHS copy of the Beasties interview from the box in 94.
So it could be. It could be the last copy on Earth.
It might be the last copy on Earth, Jim.
All right, Justin, we're going to take one more break.
Okay.
And when we come back, I'm going to pick your brain and see what you think about the release of Hot Sauce Committee Part 2.
Can't wait.
So hang tight.
I understand that, you know, maybe Mike is, you know, you have a preference to Mike for some reason, and you wanted to shoot Mike more and use Mike more in this film, you know, and I'm a band member, there's three of us, but whatever, if it's your, you know, vision, if that's what you call it, you know, maybe we just do things differently in New York, but, you know, however you say.
Let's say I'm the world's greatest taxidermist. I stuff the bear, I stuff the elk, and I pose them in natural wooden settings. I have two things at the Museum of Natural History.
I get it.
So what I'm saying is you are the bear of a bitch I stuff.
A dead animal.
Yo, check this out. You're listening to the brouhaha.
Oh, yes. Back on the brouhaha. Justin Prager, a.k.a. Justin Time. Music professional. Music fan.
Fan first, then professional.
Music fan, then music professional. Let's talk about 2011.
Yes.
Or we could talk 2010. Beastie Boys were supposed to put... I guess we could even talk 2009. Beastie Boys were supposed to put out Hot Sauce Committee Part 1.
Yeah.
That didn't happen for obvious reasons.
Yep.
MCA got sick. And then there was a whole bunch of speculation. And then news just broke that Hot Sauce Committee Part 1 will be on indefinite hold, but Hot Sauce Committee Part 2 coming out in the spring of 2011. What is your take on this? Because part of your job is to know when albums come out, so you know when to work them.
Yeah, well, it sounds like they're taking the Star Wars trilogy effect and, you know, putting out something that's in the future before, you know, going back to the past.
But so, the track listing for Hot Sauce Committee Part 2 is the same as Hot Sauce Committee Part 1.
Are you asking for my take on it? Like, why you think that's the reason?
Not your take, but, like, you working in the music industry...
Yeah.
I mean, do you think it's going to come out in 2011?
By the feel of it, and then, yeah, actually talking to somebody at the label, it sounds like it's official, and we'll definitely have new and official... And like I said, it's more of a, I should say, an official hip-hop release from the Beasties next year.
And have you heard anything about the album?
Really, the only things I've heard are from the press release. I haven't really heard anything else. You know, with that camp, they're really tight-lipped with everything.
They are.
So, that's all I've heard. I haven't heard anybody really working with them. I believe it's still going to have some rock element. I think they're going to, you know, since they kind of got their ya-ya's out with a real true hip-hop album with the Five Boroughs, I think they're definitely going to come back to that, you know, the Check Your Head, Ill Communication type of flavor. But still do, you know, obviously still do hip-hop tracks, but I think, you know, bring the instruments back in as well.
And because you work in the biz, when someone says spring of 2011, what does that mean?
That usually means spring of 2013.
Oh, no! No!
But, what
spring?
No.
When is spring? Really, is it March? Is it April? Is it May?
I really want to say it's going to be no later than May.
Okay.
I'm really hoping, because it's, you know, I think they really want to get back into it. I mean, you know, when something like that happens to a band in the Young situation, you know, I think they just really want to, you know, kind of come back and, like, focus on the future and everything like that. You know, I'm sure they went through a lot. God knows what they were going through with that. And I think they're ready. I mean, the mix-up was, what, 2008?
Yeah.
So I think they're ready to kind of get back into it.
Yeah, 2007. Because I was surprised when Hot Sauce Committee Part 1 was going to come out. I was like, whoa, it was only 2 years between albums. This is like a treat
for
us.
I know. Yeah, I was definitely shocked about that, because they really haven't come out with something back-to-back like that probably since Check It Had No Communication.
Yeah.
So, I was definitely excited to see that. And hopefully, I'm really hoping that these guys, like, come back and start putting out albums more on a regular basis now, because it really has been kind of choppy. And, you know, I mean, the guys are older now. They got families and the whole thing. So, I mean, I get it, but it was definitely nice to see more consistency with them, you know, starting, I guess, in what you could call the new decade.
Justin.
Yeah.
Thank you for being on the Brouhaha, finally.
This was awesome.
And thank you for calling me on a landline, too.
I'm on the landline. I'm probably one of the few left in Queens. But, no, I loved it. And, you know, I'll be glad to come back at any time.
Okay. And if you want to get rid of any of your Beastie goodies ever, I'm only a phone call away.
I will keep you posted on that. And I'll actually keep you posted on the Inside Scoop if I hear anything from Capitol Records as well.
Yeah, let me know.
I will definitely let you know.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, that was just in time. We are going to take a break, and when we come back, we will play a real game of 20 questions with John.
Hey, kids, gather around for Biz's Beat of the Day.
Oh, okay.
Let's all do it together with Biz.
Hey, kids, this is Biz's Beat of the Day. Okay, here's Biz's Beat of the Day. Yum, 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 yum. Yum yum, yum yum, yum yum, yum yum. Now practice that at home, and I'll see you later. Happy Halloween! Bye bye.
The Brouhaha.
We have returned on the Brouhaha. It is now time to play 20 questions with John. John, hold on a second. Before we do 20 questions, we must remember what day it is today.
October 31st, that is my date of birth. I got to the party, know what I did, the smirk.
There you go. Happy birthday, AdRock. And AdRock doesn't know it, but on the web, on BeastieBoys.com, he listed what he wanted for his birthday, and I bought him a pair of those Alyssa Milano Green Bay Packer jeans. Did you get to see that, John?
I did see that. They were very nice, very stylish.
So I don't know if he's going to wear them or he's going to give them to Kathleen, but anyway, I'll get him the pair with the Green Bay Packers on. I don't know if he wanted the Packers or if he just wanted any team.
Well, there is an affinity there with the Green Bay hat, but I believe that was Mike D that wore one of those.
Yeah, on the Get It Together single and on the maxi single and on the poster. Someone actually flubbed that question on an earlier game of 20 questions.
Yes.
So if I gave you that question, would you have been able to answer it?
I'm a student of the game, Jim.
Ooh, all right.
Yep.
And I ask everyone, will you take good care of the Beastie Rama if you win it?
Absolutely. I will cherish it. I will nurture it. Long walks, whatever it takes.
Will you dust it?
Yeah, sure.
Because I think that's the important thing. If you dust it every couple months, it'll be fine.
Hygiene. So it's about hygiene for you.
And you, we have to point out that you're such a Beastie Boys fan that you took their music picks. You loved their music picks, and you made one of their music picks your wedding song. So can you explain?
Yes, the Beasties introduced me really to the Meters and a lot of that funk music that they were down with in that, you know, Check Your Head and Paul's Boutique era. And I started getting into buying records, and one of the first records I bought was the Meters' Sissy Strut LP. And on that record is a song called Darling, Darling, which I ended up using as my wedding song with my wife. So that was cool.
Now, is your wife a Beastie Boys fan?
She is. We attended a show at the Borgata, one of the gala events.
And did you dress in pageant clothing?
I didn't, but I was not, you know, I didn't wear like the khakis or the cargos like they asked. I wore like a nice button-down shirt, but there were definitely people, you know, that were much more decked out than I was there.
Okay. So, yeah, and you know what? Because of the Beastie Boys, I own Jimmy Smith albums, and I would have never owned them were it not for the Beastie Boys.
Mm-hmm.
And do you have a Beastie Boys album of choice?
Before
we start this, so I can kind of gauge where you're coming from.
Yeah, I mean, for me, that Paul's Boutique to Ill Communication was definitely three, to me, four, like records where you're just wondering when they were going to put out a song you didn't like. To answer your question, I would say Paul's Boutique. I would say that was the most played Beastie record for me, but I would hold Check Your Head, you know, very close to that.
Yeah, I mean, that was a solid, solid three albums. And then, you know, and no knocking Hello Nasty or To the Five Boroughs.
Nope.
All right. So we're going to ask you, well, maybe we won't ask you 20 questions. It depends how many you answer correctly, But your goal is to answer 20 consecutive Beastie Boys questions. If you win, I will send you a Beastie Boys diorama. If you get stumped along the way, I will give you 3 multiple choice options.
Okay.
Start the music. Let us play 20 questions. Question number 1. What was the first song on the Beastie Boys' new album, Check Your Head?
That would be Jimmy James, one of my faves.
Jimmy James is correct. Question number 2. The front cover image of the Beastie Boys' Sounds of Science anthology is them as old men. What is the image on the back?
Them as children.
Them as children is correct. 2 for 2. John, going for question number 3. Name the music video character that first appears in Sabotage, then reprises his role in To Check It Out.
My initial inclination is Sir Stuart Wallace.
Mm-hmm.
I may want to elect for one of my multiple choice.
Wow.
I'm feeling pretty good about Sir Stuart Wallace, I gotta say.
Okay. Feeling good about it?
I'm feeling good about it.
Okay. You want to go with it then?
Let's go with it.
Sir Stuart Wallace is correct.
Nice.
And I would love to see him in another video.
Yeah. Maybe for the soft committee, whatever number they're dealing with, but we'll
yeah,
take it.
Bring back Sir Stuart. Question number 4. Finish the following lyric from So What You Want. I'm cooler than a cucumber.
In a bowl of hot sauce.
In a bowl of hot sauce. Correct. And speaking of hot sauce, you know, Hot Sauce Committee Part 2. We know it's coming out in the spring of 2011.
Can't wait.
All right, John, 4 for 4. Question number 5. What Beastie Boy is married to film director and web show food host Tamara Davis?
That would be the M-I-K-E to the D.
Mike D is correct. You go to question number 6.
I'm staying humble, Jim.
Right. Because some people are like, oh, I'm going to win it. I'm rolling now. And then the next question, like, oh, boy.
Nope.
All right, question number 6. October 31st, that is the date of birth of Ad-Rock. What Beastie Boy has the next birthday?
That would be Michael Diamond.
Michael Diamond. I believe that's 2 questions with Michael Diamond as the answer. You are, once again, correct. Question number 7. What political scandal is mentioned in the song Sabotage?
That would be Watergate with my man Richard Nixon.
You didn't even need to use the Richard Nixon. You are correct. Watergate.
Mm-hmm.
Question number 8. This is called What Song Am I? The phrase Get Live is spelled out multiple times. The album I'm featured on is shouted out. I was played live at the Tibetan Freedom Concert in D.C., but haven't been around much since. What song am I?
I'm going to go with Shame in Your Game.
Putting Shame in Your Game? Final?
Yeah.
Final?
Yeah.
You
yeah.
are correct. That is the song. It is. Question number 9. What do the following album covers all have in common? And I have also a note here. It is not a parental advisory sticker.
Okay.
So all of these albums have something in common. Check Your Head, Ill Communication, Some Old Bullshit, Sounds of Science, Aglio e Olio.
I'm going to have to go multiple choice. I'm not feeling this initially.
All right. Here we go. We have A, they're all in black and white. B, they all feature images taken by Glenn E. Friedman. C, they all feature the Beastie Boys. And D, they were all released in that order.
Okay, I'm going to say black and white.
Black and white, you are correct.
Nice.
All black and white, no color in any of those album covers. And we march on to question number 10. You have 2 multiple choice options left.
Yes, sir.
And you're looking strong.
I'm feeling good so far.
On Halloween night, yeah. Question number 10. The Beastie Boys' former percussionist, Eric Bobo, departed from the band in the mid to late 90s to join this group full time.
I know he was with Cypress. Yeah, I'm going to go with Cypress.
Cypress. Final answer.
Let's do it.
Eric Bobo is a member of Cypress Hill.
Let's do it, baby.
Question number 11. Okay. Describe the backdrop the Beastie Boys used during the Lollapalooza tour in 1994. Did you attend that show?
I did. Right. Actually, that's something on your Brouhaha website that we actually called out, was the Smashing Pumpkins closing that show. And I went to the one in New York. Was it Randall's Island or whatever it was called?
Mm-hmm.
And I just remember Beasties. That was just insane. Like, you know, during some shows, some acts, some people were getting drinks and stuff. The Beasties, everyone ran over. It was just a total, it was just chaos.
People just stopped in their tracks, yeah.
Yeah, and then Smashing Pumpkins came on, and I think everyone was just like, all right, maybe it's time to go, because this is just not measuring up. So, yes, I did attend that show. It was phenomenal.
And yeah, I feel bad for the Smashing Pumpkins. Because I went to two of those shows, and I'm like, all right, for the second one, I'll stay for the Pumpkins. And then I stayed 15 minutes into the set, and I'm like, I can't do it. I'm like, I'm just too hyped up right now. I need to go to my car and listen to the Beastie Boys.
Yes, and Tribe were also a part of that day, so that was also cool to check them out. So.
Yeah.
I know the background was...
It's in your head somewhere. It's in your head somewhere.
A Buddhist figure. Now, I'm going to go multiple choice because I'm not 100%. I have it in my head.
Okay, so this is your second multiple choice.
Okay.
A three-headed dragon behind a yin-yang. B, a whole slew of sexual positions. C, the Beastie Boys on a dollar bill. Or D, no backdrop at all.
Okay, that must have been what I thought was the Buddhist figure. So it was actually the dragons with the yin-yang. I will go with that.
You are correct. Going on to number 12, you only have one more multiple choice option. Here's another What Song Am I?
Okay.
The riff is an old bass line MCA apparently wrote way back in the day, later dusted it off during a Brooklyn jam session. Things bounce like a Spalding in this song. And when the Beastie Boys were crafting this song, their good friend Dave Skilkin passed away. What song am I?
That would be Gratitude.
Gratitude is correct. John, you go on to question number 13.
All right.
On License to Ill, as you should know, there's a song called Slow and Low. It is actually a cover song originally demoed by what group?
That would be Run DMC, baby.
Run DMC and Jam Master Jay. Hey. All right.
That's right.
Question number 14. John, you may get that diorama.
Let's go.
And since you live across the river, I might just walk it over to you one day.
We can meet on the GW.
Yeah, we can meet halfway on the GW. Question number 14.
Okay.
Hello Nasty features a track whose beat consists solely of Mixmaster Mike cutting up a record on his turntable. Is the song called 3 MCs and 1 DJ, or is the song called Mixmaster Mike?
3 MCs and 1 DJ is the name of the cut.
3 MCs and 1 DJ. Question number 15.
All right. Woo!
All right. The logo for Grand Royal Records featured what two gambling vices?
I might actually have to go multiple on this one. Is that available?
This will be your last one.
Okay.
So you want to go multiple?
Yep.
All right. The logo features A, slots, and a roulette wheel. Mm-hmm. B, dice and cards. C, cards and a roulette wheel. Or D, dice and cash.
You know, I actually should have known that one. As soon as I asked for multiple choice, it popped in my head. So it is dice and cards.
Dice and cards is correct. That is the logo of Grand Royal. All right, we're getting close. When the Beastie Boys did Saturday Night Live in 1998, Ad Rock appeared in a skit with what actress? And I'll even give you a little hint. I think he was wearing a hoodie. Did you watch this in 1998?
I did.
So it's in there. It's in your melon somewhere.
It's somewhere in my head. So this was an actress. Was she attractive? This actress?
Some might say. And I'm not saying she was a great actress.
Okay.
But she was an actress.
She was an actress. Oh, damn it. I might as well just throw something out there. I'm going to say Gwyneth Paltrow.
Gwyneth Paltrow, final answer.
Yes.
You are incorrect. But your run had some nice rhythm to it.
Yes. You know, and actually in anticipation of this, I did just kind of brush up on like the performances and stuff like that. And I just, this one I totally do not have.
She was, I believe, engaged at one point to Carson Daly.
Oh, Jenny Love Hewitt? Is that who it is?
Jennifer Love Hewitt.
Oh, man. All right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wasn't even close to her. I didn't.
Yep.
So how far did I get there? 16?
You went out on question number 16.
Well, thank you for the opportunity, Jim.
Yeah, and thank you for being on the Brouhaha. You'll be passing out candy for the rest of the night?
I will. I'll do some of my neighborhood duties here and make sure everyone's safe and enjoying their Halloween. Yep.
All right. Well, thank you for playing 20 Questions. Have a happy Halloween, John.
You too, Jim.
So for John, Justin Prager from Music Choice and Kid Rock, my name is Jim Shear, and we will see yins later.
That's it. That's all there is. Come on.
Yo, we gonna end it on a 1, 2, 3 note. Are you ready? 1, 2, 1, 2, 3.
Ah! Guarantee we bring the brouhaha.
It's a brouhaha.